yesterday. We are continuing with our public hearings on illegal mining and fatalities in mines. Yesterday we listened to the Department of Mineral Resources. We listened to the Chamber of Mines. We listened to Harmony and ARM. And in terms of our program today, we are supposed to get the input from the NUM, Solidarity, and SANCO. And I must say that we don't have the luxury of time. We will have to finish here well before 12 o'clock because there's a joint sitting at 12. So we would need to utilize the time available to us in a manner that would make us finish around 11:30. I understand from NUM their delegation is not yet complete, and therefore we would like to give this opportunity to Solidarity so that they can take us through their submission. Over to you, sir.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, thank you very much for the invitation and the opportunity to participate in this public hearing. It's really an honour for us to participate. Solidarity represents thousands of mine workers and is an established role player in the mining industry. I just want to say from the start that the text that I drafted, and there is a copy of the text available to everybody, but the text that I drafted was done so on Monday already, so some of the aspects that I'm going to present now will be repetition of what you heard yesterday. But and in the slideshow, I've added some aspects that were raised yesterday as well. I just want from the start want to refer to the stakeholders forum that was established in Welkom. As soon as this tragedy at the Eland shaft of Harmony Mine came to light, Solidarity publicly requested the Minister of Mineral Resources, Ms. Shabangu, to appoint a special task team to investigate these illegal mining activities in South Africa, and who formally repeated this request on 3 June. We were very heartened by the swift reaction by the Honourable Minister, the Director General of Mineral Resources, and the Chief Inspector of Mines when they called a meeting on the 6th of June with Solidarity and the NUM. They called a steering committee meeting with all stakeholders on 13 June, during which all stakeholders gave their views regarding the problem of illegal mining, and then the Honourable Minister announced the appointment of a stakeholders forum to address the problem. And she caused the formation of the stakeholders forum and the first meeting of the forum on the 26th of June. I'm not going to go into the aims of the stakeholders forum, but you know, we live in an era where people are very quick to criticise, but I believe that credit must be given where it's due as well. Solidarity lauds the Honourable Minister, the Director General of Mineral Resources, and the Chief Inspector of Mines for the urgency and the earnestness with which they approach the problem, and Solidarity pledges their commitment to participate in the activities of the stakeholder forum and to assist where we can with steps to eradicate the problem of illegal mining. Now I want to start with the extent of the problem. Now I must first, like a good lawyer, always give a provision, a rider to absolve myself. What we say, you know, the nature of a union, we have contact with many people on different levels, and we pick up a lot of information. And what we say is based on this information that we received. It's not always based on fact, and I will point out where it is purely supposition or where it's not based on fact. And a lot of the things that I will present now is also, but has been confirmed by the presenters yesterday. Firstly, we want to start off, in our mind, this problem of illegal mining is one of the worst tragedies and catastrophes that ever strikes the South African mining industry. There has always been theft and pilfering of in mining, present in mining. But illegal mining activities have never before been practiced, as far as we know, on an organized and grand scale as currently in South Africa. Just look at the death rate the last few months, although we make it the last year. 105 people died in illegal mining activities, according to our records, whereas plus minus 80 people died in legal mining activities. This illegal mining has now reached the scale of highly organized crime, reminiscent to the mafia in all its forms across the world. We've heard yesterday that there are broadly five organized levels, from physical mining to the selling of illegally mined gold to international buyers. It seems to us that this problem has been known to a great extent, but it was ignored or tolerated for too long in South Africa, which allowed it to grow to this monstrous proportion. We can only guess at the reasons for this toleration of the problem, as those people who did it or allowed it now naturally tone down their own role in this regard to protect their own interests and reputation. However, discussions on various levels with different people have indicated that many people of management and other levels knew about these illegal activities and either participated therein for own gain or allowed it to happen out of loyalty to other people or out of fear for their own safety or the safety of their families. Now, I don't have evidence about this. This is what we picked up, information that we received. And I think this is something that needs to be investigated properly. Indications are that the involvement of people working in mining houses gave illegal miners access to inside information with regard to security activities and mining, and this placed these illegal miners at an advantage, and it makes it more difficult for mining companies and the police to act against them. It has also been indicated that the involvement of persons working for mining houses also led to illegal mining receiving logistical support from inside the mining houses, and we heard about that yesterday as well. Illegal mining activities have developed to such an extent that illegal miners are now receiving very good income, which increases the willingness for people to get involved. Now, link this with my next point. Indications are that experienced and trained mine workers, artisans and miners, who lost their work in mining houses are also involved in the illegal mining activities, especially on these levels 2 and 3 that was pointed out yesterday. According to our records, approximately 19,000 illegal miners that we knew of were retrenched in the last 5 years. The next point, loss of lives. Irrespective of the fact that the people who participate in illegal mining activities are criminals or may be regarded as criminals because they participate in criminal activities, they still remain people, and the loss of life of people remains a tragedy and is unnecessary. Any death, no matter whose death, is one death too many. From discussions that we had in the stakeholders forum, it seems that most of the people who died are the workers at the proverbial coalface. They labourers who did the actual physical digging and mining, the so-called foot soldiers. Most of them seem to get involved in these illegal mining activities from necessity, for the sake of survival, not necessarily out of malice or clearly formulated criminal intent. Some apparently even get involved because they were caught up in these activities due to human trafficking. And I concede that being poor and hungry is not an excuse and never will be an excuse for criminal activities. But it remains a great tragedy that such people are caught up in illegal activities and they lose their lives in this process while they are actually being exploited by people who make money out of them. Apart from the loss of life, these illegal mining activities also lead to major financial losses. We've heard what Mr. Baxter had to say yesterday, and I think that was a very important and very informative presentation. Solidarity believes that mining is the most important industry in South Africa, which forms the backbone of our economy. We do not believe that the impact of illegal mining activities on our economy could and should be ignored or underestimated. The theft of gold, which could have been mined by mining companies, leave them with huge losses, or at the worst, huge potential losses. And incidentally, we do not believe that this problem is limited to gold mining industry. We believe it's common in all commodities, including platinum, diamonds, and gold. The logistics necessary for illegal mining activities often comes from the stock of the legal mines. It's either stolen by illegal miners themselves or by the legal miners who supply it to the illegal miners. We've even heard of illegal miners who have access to and the use of the explosive carts of the mines. This also leads to huge financial losses for mines. Illegal mining leads to increased security risks, which increases the cost of security for mines, which in turn increases the cost of mining. And then illegal mining activities have a negative impact on safety at mines. We heard about that yesterday, and I'll return to that later as well. This, together with clashes with illegal miners, lead to the disruption of mining operations, lost time, which means loss of productivity, loss of income for mines. Less income for mines means less income for mine workers, for legal mine workers. And it leads to an increased risk with regard to job security. It's a horrible circle. This increases the risk of legal mine workers losing their work due to further retrenchments. Less income for mining houses and the illegal smuggling of gold and illegal business activities in support thereof all lead to major losses of revenue for the state as well. And then, of course, it places an increased demand on the already heavily extended Department of Justice and South African Police Services, something that this country also cannot afford. One of our greatest concerns is the increased health and safety risks of these illegal mining. It's alleged that many legal mine workers are regularly intimidated, they are attacked, and they are assaulted by illegal mine workers. This leads to an increased risk of health and safety for mine workers and their families. We do not imagine that illegal mine workers comply with legal prescripts and that they follow the best health and safety practices, if any, during mining activities. We've received information that illegal miners damage and blast safety structures in the mines, for example, safety pillars that were left in the shafts. They steal or remove safety equipment from mines. They interfere with electrical installations, water and compressed air stock, and ventilation. They work deep underground. Some of the bodies at Eland was recovered at 1,500 meters underground. And all of this increases the risk to health and safety for legal miners. Another concern of us is the unsuccessful actions against illegal miners. Now, what I've stated here is historically. I know a lot of new actions have already been taken, and there has been some prosecutions and disciplinary prosecutions in the recent past. But when we look at security and police operations that have been lodged against illegal miners, for example, during Operation Zama in March 2009, Harmony arrested 114 illegal miners, and now during June 2009, they arrested 294 illegal miners and charged them. But if you look at the report from the Institute of Security Studies, 2007, it stated that the conviction rate for illegal miners is 38% due to the lack of capacity of the Department of Justice and the police to deal with this problem effectively. And that's a major concern. Another factor that contributes to the ineffectiveness of action against illegal miners is the fact that unused mine shafts are interlinked, and we are informed that it comprises literally thousands of kilometers, which makes it virtually impossible to police. This lack of effective action against illegal miners creates an environment that is conducive to the increase of such illegal activities. Another major concern, and I know the communities are going to talk later on, but this is something that was raised during the the forum as well, and that's aspects germane to the local communities. I regard this matter of illegal miners and the syndicates as very similar to guerrilla warfare. And when we consider what Mao Zedong said about guerrilla warfare, we find the same applies here. It's possible for legal miners to disappear into the local communities to receive support from them, if it is to the benefit of those local communities, and if the illegal miners should win the hearts and the minds of those communities. However, if the mines were to such an extent involved with and acting to the benefit of the communities would protect the mines. They would not tolerate any activities that could endanger or prejudice the mines, and they would readily identify persons who participated in illegal mining activities and cooperate with the mines and the police in acting against this problem. Now the fact that, and we've heard that yesterday as well, that illegal miners seem to receive support from people in the communities, because it's people in the community who provide them with bread and foodstuffs and everything else. They seem to receive support from people in the community, and this raises the question as to what extent has the mining houses in the area complied with their social responsibilities to benefit the local areas in which they operate. Related to this, the impact of retrenchment of mine workers from mines on the local community may also be a contributing factor which alienates the community. There are some aspects that we feel it falls outside the scope of the stakeholders forum, and we feel it should be investigated by the appropriate authorities. Firstly, legislation, and we referred to that yesterday as well. The Honourable Committee has asked numerous questions about legislation. I believe that the legislation under which illegal miners are being charged, even up at this stage, is either of a general nature, like trespassing and that type of offences, or it focuses on something other than illegal mining. For example, organised crime. They used charging under the Organised Crime Act. They also charged them under the Mine Health and Safety Act. The problem with these acts is that are specific type of offences aimed at a specific reason. Organised crime. If you charge a person under the Organised Crime Act, you have to prove some other intention of that person to knowingly participate in organised crime. It's not always the fact that on all of the levels of these miners. Okay, the same under the Mine Health and Safety Act. If you charge him under the Mine Health and Safety Act, the whole offence relates to safety, and that the person intentionally or negligently endangers safety. That does not always apply to all of the miners, illegal miners, and everybody involved in illegal mining activities. I think the higher you go up into the spectrum of illegal mining, you would find that those people are too far removed from the safety aspects, for example. I know these legislation can be used and are being used successfully now, but we believe that we should perhaps consider creating new laws, new offences, criminal sanctions, specifically focused on illegal mining and illegal mining activities with appropriate sentences or appropriate penalties. We should at least investigate and consider this aspect. Recently, government has conceded that the closing of specialized units of the police should be reconsidered. We submit that I'm not sure of the correct name, but what we all used to know as the old Gold and Diamond Branch of the police, which was a specialized unit to investigate the illegal possession, smuggling, dealing, etc. of mining commodities, were very successful. And we should consider the establishment of such a specialized unit to investigate illegal mining activities. And then something that I'm very, very concerned about, and I don't think it's really been, to some extent, maybe the people from the chamber can assist us here, but I don't think it's really been appreciated and investigated in South Africa. Blasting in mines is a highly specialized and a technical field. Rock engineers investigate rock formations and they draft plans according to which blasting is to take place. and in which they provide for safety measures, such as safety pillars, etc. Illegal miners do not bother about these stringent safety measures. Now, if we look at the past few months, most of the fatalities in the mines in the past few months was due to, I'm not talking about legal mining fatalities, or deaths of legal mine workers, have been due to fall of ground following seismic activity. This indicates to us that our ground is becoming more and more unstable. We think it's very important that the role and the impact of blasting and the activities of the illegal miners, that the impact that this has on the security, on the stability of our ground, should be investigated. And maybe also while we're doing that, also investigate blasting of mines which are in very close proximity to each other. And not so much perhaps in the Free State area, although there the mines are close together as well, but even more so in the West Rand area. And there's also illegal mining activities, and I think that must something that must be looked at because it must have a greater impact on the stability of ground, especially the deeper we go. Just want to make a few general remarks, which is not on my document that I drafted on Monday. It is on the slideshow. A remark was made yesterday, and this is now following the whole debate of nationalization of mines, but that the state should take control of mines, not for the sake of production, but for the sake of control. Now, there is legislation available to address this. There's the National Key Points Act, and there's also a National Key Points Bill that is before Parliament at this stage. To declare all mines national key points would enable the state to have a controlling say over the security of mines. So that is also perhaps an option to consider. And then I've anticipated the question because it was asked to, other role players, what are they doing with regard to the problem? So I anticipated this question that you may ask, what is Solidarity doing? Well, firstly, we are participating in the Stakeholders Forum, actively participating there, and we're doing what we can within our sphere of influence. We also participate on various other forums in the mining industry, where we provide inputs, especially on health and safety. And what we are busy with, we've done it informally, and we are in process of doing it formally, is to notify all of Solidarity's members in mines of the criminality and the seriousness of involvement with illegal mining activities, notify them of the dangers involved with illegal mining, and of the consequences for themselves, their families, and the economy if they participate and they get caught. Also, we inform them that participation in illegal mining activities can and shall not be tolerated. That strict action, including disciplinary and criminal steps, shall be taken by mines against any persons caught participating, and that within the prescripts of the law and legal ethics, Solidarity shall not condone evidence if related to illegal mining activities. And we encourage also our members who have information and or who took part in illegal mining to come forward with this information before they are caught. We've discussed it with the people participating in the forum, and we've agreed that should our members come forward with information and assisting investigations before they are caught and arrested, that the disciplinary steps would not be taken against them. And of course, there's a procedure under the Criminal Procedure Act that they can also receive indemnity. They can rather participate and assist with the investigation against illegal miners if they come to the fore. So we encourage them to do that as well. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. That is our presentation. I don't know if there's any questions.
Thank you very much, Solidarity. Indeed, it's an informative presentation. Honourable members, it's open to you for the questions and inputs. Thank you. Honourable Diallo, Honourable Matibela.
Mine is not a question. I don't know whether all this correct. It's just great to get into this mess. I will at least repeat what I said yesterday. Now, I appreciate it. You know, this investigation can go on, and legislation can be framed, laws can be framed, and all of this. But what is important, I think the presenter also did that, say, what is important for this matter is for the state to control these mines which are ready. Now, it goes by the illegal people. Now, the control of this is very important. Within all this, there are a lot of character elements, criminal syndicates, what, so many things. Investigation is going to take very long time. Legislation is going to take very long time. Laws are going to be debated. All 5 years and so on. It's not easy. But what is easy, basically, is to control the state, to control this mind. If possible, also to nationalize this mind. People who are supporting these illegal miners, where? Are people who are suffering amongst the communities, and they don't benefit anything. You know, if you are hungry, you support anything that comes in. And these miners are within the communities. Yes, communities are suffering. If this mine state can control and nationalize, the people will be able to employ. People are suffering, and people are not only suffering, there's a loss of life. So many people died and continuing to die. We will sit here debating laws, legislation, people died. But we have power, we have big power. What's wrong with us? We have big power to control this. Then after taking over, then we look at what procedures can be. But sitting down, talking about legislation, laws, investigations, many instigators, national and external forces are inside. Presenter mentioned the guerrilla war. It's a guerrilla war. Guerrilla. Yes, it's like that. Exactly. Now, in order to control this, these are our mineral resources. Our land. We fought this land. Why? What's wrong? We've got state power, we've got an army, we've got police, we've got intelligence, we have all that. Why are we waiting to die? Just control this mine. Then make legislation. Make laws how to run this mine. Then people will be employed. People are unemployed. People are suffering. They support, yes, whatever comes. Even myself, if I'm suffering, I will support that. Because I'm hungry. Thank you, I'm sorry. I would like to straight get into this matter. And I said this yesterday. The president is presenting almost what yesterday has been, you know, put down to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Giale, Honorable Makirel.
Thank you, Sir, and sorry for coming after time, but at least a little bit I've heard. I've got a question that remained behind yesterday. It's about these people, illegal mine workers who are being arrested what charges are they getting? Is it okay? I heard that they are only charged as trespasses, and some are paying 50 rand. But is there anywhere they have been asked how much are they earning being illegal miners? The other thing is, miners are saying we've got scarce skills. People who are working in the mines lack skills. But these miners, are they not having skills? I don't think if you don't have skill, you can be able to go underground and get this gold. The other one is about the legislation. I don't know how legislation is going to work then, because there is legislation that has been legislated for mine owners to have, but still those people are going past those laws, even when the laws are there, but they still can go in, and I don't see how legislation will work. I also would like to agree about nationalizing the mines. Then government will be able to really look after its own resources, because we've got people who come here. These mine owners are not South Africans, they are from abroad. And they are coming just to steal our mineral resources, which we are given by God in our land. So I wonder if that will happen. And with solidarity, there is this thing of saying people are hungry. That is why those people are there and doing criminal activities. I just want to know if they are in their community meetings, what do they really say? Yes, we hear that they get support from people around, but how is there anybody who has ever agreed to say, yes, we are supplying the people with food? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Matibela. Honorable Lucas.
I think there's an interesting aspect of this presentation, and that was the involvement of communities. And one should understand that when communities are unemployed, they would feel that they could be receiving an income by supporting people that are doing illegal mining. However, the question I'd like to know, are there any members of Solidarity who have been involved in illegal mining? Are there any of their communities involved in that? And then you overlap into needing professional people, because when I looked at the diagram there of the mine, it's a network. I think it needs really some experience to negotiate that those roads and getting back to surface, because I think it's most difficult. When we've gone a couple of times underground, you just get lost. And I think it's just because of inexperience or whatever. But it is complicated. You don't know which route to get back. So I think there's quite a bit of good experienced people who are helping to navigate these networks of roads. And then organized crime still remains the biggest problem. And what are we doing about this? This is, and has Solidarity any idea of what can really be done except, you know, going to court? How can we expose these people? Because I tell you, the person from the township won't have the connection to get rid of the stuff he's got. There are other higher powers.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Solidarity, would you add to those comments or questions?
I'm not sure if I've got everything correct, but I basically there's three questions that I've identified that I need to answer. The rest were remarks and comments that were made, to which I cannot really provide an answer. I think the one question, the question about the charges, people arrested, what charges? And as they've been asked about earnings, that's not something that I can answer. I don't know that someone else, the police and justice will have to answer that. The remark was made about scarce skills. Yes, that's part of the problem. Miners are experienced, they are trained, they possess scarce skills, and then they are retrenched and they lose their work, and they have to apply their skills somewhere. Legislation, yeah, that's something that's a difficult one. Legislation is always difficult. You know, we have one act that doesn't work. But perhaps one of the parts of the reasons why it doesn't work is, as I said, it does not focus on the problem. It focuses on collateral aspects and not necessarily on the problem of illegal miners. Okay, the communities. Has anybody actually said that we are agreed that we are supplying them? It's the one question that I've identified. No, I don't think so. But from information received on various levels, also discussions with the police and community members, it is said that you know, where do they get their bread from? There are shops in Belcombe, for example, who they think may be supplying that. But of course, we will not have full details on that. I think the police will know about that, but they will not divulge that information until they've acted against these people. So, you know, these are all very sensitive type of information that I do not have details on that. This is what I said in the beginning. It's just what we hear, what we pick up from the ground, what we pick up from discussions and information that we receive. But it's not necessarily proven. Involvement, direct question, any members of Solidarity involved? Undoubtedly. We have no doubt in our minds that some of our members may be involved in illegal mining activities. That's why we give them the very, very strict warning. I don't have evidence, I don't have convictions, evidence of convictions. Maybe the mines have some evidence, you know, of some of the people that they have convicted already may have been Solidarity members, I don't know. I don't think they even approach Solidarity for assistance in the disciplinary hearings because, you know, because of the strong stance we take against illegal minings. But I have no doubt in my mind that because of the various levels on which this problem occurs, and who are people who are involved on various levels, I have no doubt that some of our members may be involved there, yes. And if we find them, we will give them to the proper authorities. The other remark about experienced people in mining, it goes with the scarce skills, for sure. That's part of the problem. Organized crime is the biggest problem. How can we expose it? What Solidarity's views on that? Well, I think, firstly, action should be taken on all levels. This is a social problem. Not only a criminal problem, it's a social problem. And as with any social problems, it must be addressed on various levels. On social levels, on levels involving the community, on uplifting the living standard of people so that they don't need to resort to crime. We have to effectively police it, get information, and effectively police it, conduct intelligence and information operations. Unions have a role to play. Unions' direct involvement is more informative and to get information through to its members, but they have a role to play. Solidarity specifically does a lot to assist communities, the communities that are involved with Solidarity. And we do a lot to uplift poverty there and to assist people. And I think this must be done on all levels, to all communities. So, you know, I'm giving a very general and broad answer here now, but I think this must be addressed really from parliamentary level legislation, but also right through down to social services, proper policing, proper courts, assisting people, getting people involved in their own communities. And minds should be involved in the communities and provide also social assistance and upliftment in the specific communities where they operate. I don't know if that provides a sufficient answer, but that is all that I can actually answer at this stage.
And I think that in your input on page 3, in 3.3, you are raising the fact that this problem has been known to a greater extent and ignored and tolerated. Now, yesterday, as you have heard, we have been probing the question of when has this started. A number of responses were to suggest that this was discovered in 1999, and we're saying this, that before 1999, what happened? Because we are not convinced that this is a problem that started in 1999. In your own view of solidarity, how far back does this date? Remembering, of course, the establishment of the Gold Squad well before 1999. The second aspect is, in the same document, you are raising suspicion on the involvement of management at various levels, and you're suggesting that this must be investigated. Any suggestions in terms of how this investigation must unfold over and above what we were told about the work that is done by police in this regard? The other aspect you are raising pertains to the explosives, the access, easy access seemingly by these illegal miners to the explosives, and you're mentioning the huge financial losses to the mines. This is a worrying factor, because as you are aware, that some of these explosives are linked to ATM bombings and so forth, and indeed, it's a matter that posing a security risk to the country once you have these kinds of materials in the hands of people that can use it either way. Could you just expatiate for us in terms of how is it possible? We heard from the Chamber of Mines that the storage of these explosives is in different levels, some above surface, some, you know, underground. So let's just throw some light there so that we can see when we try to find a solution, how best can we deal with this matter. Also, you are raising the fact that in page 5, that the conviction rate is about 38%. Yesterday, we heard of mega fines imposed of 50 rand, merely for trespassing. And as you had alluded to the fact that there seems not to be proper legislative provision to deal directly with the aspect of illegal mining. Now, but we are attributing this conviction rate to the capacity of SAFS and the Justice Department. I want you to expatiate on that so that when we find the solution, we are quite clear. The other aspect you just raised in your additional notes, you basically raised that there are about 19,000 legal miners that were retrenched, legal miners, the mine workers that were retrenched in the past years. Were these from this mine at Eland, or are you talking generally in the Free State? Because if this big body of people who are experienced are somewhere out there, then possibilities are quite rife that they would participate in these illegal mining activities.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. To begin with the first question, what happened before 1999? The short answer is I simply don't know. As we heard yesterday as well, there's not sufficient information available. I have, now I'm saying it very widely, I have heard that there were illegal mining has always been there, and knowing human nature, I've got no doubt that it's always been there. Perhaps not to the great extent that it has been since, or that was found to be since 1999, and not so well organized as it is today. I don't think organizations such as what exists today just develop over a short period of time. I think it's always been there. But I don't think the information exchange has always been there. That's why the information is very scarce. I know I don't want to talk on behalf of the Inspectorate of Mines, but I know that from their offices as well, especially the regional offices, there's simply just not sufficient information available. I don't think the information exchange of information between mines were there. Between mines and the Department of Mineral and Energy were there, between mines and unions were there, to that extent that you know, we could start seeing a clear picture of what's going on in the country. I'm saying, and that's my personal opinion, from human nature, and just because organizations such as these cannot just develop over a short period of time. I think it's always been there. I think it's always been, maybe, as I said, not to the extent as it's been now. Maybe ad hoc, and maybe much less organized. But it developed into a huge organization. When, how, I'm not in a position to be able to answer that. In the suspicions raised on management, how should that be investigated? Personally, I think it can be investigated only on two levels. Firstly, mines should have their own internal investigations. I don't know, I'm not an investigator, but there are things that could be done. You could have vetting of management in mines. You could have specific investigations into their business, their assets and so on, if there's sufficient reason to do so. And then, of course, I think the major thing is should be police investigations, and police investigations should be intelligence information driven. So they should gather information and then investigate, because then they have the tools to do proper investigations into the business of a person as well. But mines could also do internal investigations. And I don't know if that's a viable option or not, but you know, in the police and in the defense force and various other state departments, you have security vetting that people have to go through. In view of the importance of mining, maybe security vetting, introducing that to management in mines, could be an option, but I don't know. These are just ideas off the cuff. Explosives, easy access, security risk. How is that possible? These are things that I've heard. I don't know. I think the mine should be able to answer this. I'm not a miner myself. I come from a legal background. I have some experience in the mines, very recent, but not that much. But I'm told, for example, that when explosives are taken out to be used, there's no real control. And I don't know, the miners people should correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no real control. Let's say you take out X amount of explosives and the blasting takes place. There's no real control whether you've actually used X amount of explosives. You could have used X minus 2. And that's just not handed back where it's supposed to be done. There's no real control over it. It's not possible. I don't know. But that is what I've heard. And then what I've referred to people who cooperate with the illegal miners, and they just look the other way and provide access to explosives and so on. The capacity of the Department of Justice leading to conviction rate of 38%. I've been with the Department of Justice for a number of years, long ago in a previous life, but I've seen it with various specialized cases, that the Department of Justice, they are so overworked and overwrought. The prosecutors and the magistrates, the court rolls are full, they're under pressure from our head office and the public to complete cases. They deal with the cases, the run-of-the-mill cases, and the cases in a run-of-the-mill way, like a sausage machine, just getting these cases to court. And there's no proper time to prepare on magistrate's court level, district court level, and sometimes even on regional court level. These people are really overworked, and there's no proper time to prepare. Now, what do you need to know if you want to successfully prosecute a mining case? You need to know something about mining. You need to know the physical aspects of mining, and then you need to know all your mining legislation, and there's a myriad of those. And it's a specialization field, and the Department of Justice does not have that capacity. And even if you get a very bright prosecutor, and they get very bright attorneys to defend, the accused get very bright attorneys to defend the case, then the magistrate does not always have that knowledge. And we've seen it with various specialized cases, that the magistrate just throws a case out or acquits a person, basically just because not understanding the technicalities of the case. So that is from my experience what is possible, but in reporting the 38%, I report what the Institute for Security Studies found in their report. As far as the 50 rand fines, I've actually understood it other way. It's not that people get 50 rand fines. What actually happens, the way that I understood it, is people appear before the court the first time, they get arrested, they get charged with trespassing. Trespassing is not a serious offense. They get 50 rand bail, and then they just disappear, because every time they appear under a false name or a different name. And they just don't go back to court, because they pay the 50 rand and they're out. It's not even a fine, they're not even convicted. They pay bail, 50 rand bail and they're out. That's how I understood it. The measures introduced by the mines of hand identification and so on, I think would really address this problem. Okay, the question about the 19,000 illegal miners retrenched, the way that I understand it, it's information that was given to us by our mining industry. We've got a separate mining industry department at Solidarity. And they've given me this information, and the way that I understood it, it's not only Ierland, it's not even only the Free State, but in the whole of the gold industry in South Africa. I think I've answered all your questions. If there's one thing I've missed, please remind me, sir.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Honorable Dexter. Members, you name it. Are there further questions? Can we release the Sultan? Yes,
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm really not satisfied about the magistrates, because I think if you take a case, you know that we have to read. We have got laws in place. We've got our legislation. How to control mines, but to say they just leave people to go because they are overworked, I don't think that will get us anywhere. And I'm really not satisfied about that answer.
Would you want to react to that, Solidarity?
Chairperson, thank you. Yes, what I've said about that is from my own experience. I'm not a spokesman for the Department of Justice, and I cannot speak on their behalf, and I think they should answer these questions. But what I've said here was from my own experience, because I've been a prosecutor, and I've presided on the bench, although in an acting capacity as magistrate. And yes, I agree 100%. That's how it should be. Prosecutors and magistrates should know their work, and they should read up, and they should be specialized. And that's in an ideal world. And in practice, in reality, it doesn't happen. They're just so overloaded with work, they just have to get the cases through the system. And but that is my opinion, my experience. It's not, I'm not talking on behalf of the Department of Justice.
Thank you. Just before you step off the platform, Harmony, the question has been raised around the control of the explosives. The statement has been made that there seems to be no proper controls in terms of the stock grown and the actual stock used, and therefore the balance thereof just disappears. Can you just briefly tell us what's happening in that field?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and honourable members. If I can maybe answer on three of the questions that was asked about the Eland shaft. That shaft was closed more than a decade ago after a big seismic event, and there was some damage to the barrel. So that shaft has been closed for 10 years. On the question of the explosives get delivered to the mines twice weekly. There's no storage on surface. These explosives are transported into the levels, the stoping panels and the development ends, where they are used after proper planning has been done. Any break into those explosive boxes, any theft, is reported to the explosives unit of the SAPS and the DME as per the incident as it occurs daily. I must also say that we do proper controls on our explosives. That's done by the miners and checked off by their mine managers and mine overseers on a weekly basis. We do have regular audits from the SAPS explosive unit in conjunction with the inspectors of the DMR. Then we also have an internal audit function from our safety function, which ordered these explosives.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the clarity. Let's get NUM. If you can please occupy these seats so that you can be seen by members of parliament and introduce yourself in your input. NUM, over here. You can bring your entire team, Chief, to sit here. Introduce yourselves and please talk to us about the matter at hand, that of illegal mining. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson. My name is Eric Siabulela Gcilitshana. I'm the National Secretary for Health and Safety in the National Union of Mine Workers. Next to my left, I've got Comrade Lebohang Hlaye, who's the regional manager, if I can use that term, but we normally call them coordinators in our structures, the regional coordinator for Free State Region. Next to him, I've got Comrade James Giorgio, who's the original chairperson of Free State in the NUM. He's also the member of the National Executive of the NUM. We have got next to him, Comrade Madoda Sambata, who's the coordinator for Matlosana region, which used to be Blackstone. He's the coordinator of that region. That next to him we have got Comrade Usiso Mini, is our researcher in our parliamentary office. Then we've got Comrade, next to him we've got Comrade Nogutula. Yes. She's our researcher also in the parliamentary office. That is the team that we are having from the National Union of Mine Workers. Mr. Chairperson, our Honorable Chairperson, as NUM, we had shocking news on the 1st of June when we heard that about 36 bodies were found underground in LS shaft in Harmony, that in one of the stations in the mine. That was shocking news that we caught at NUM. Following that, the following day, we had a discussion with the DMR on the matter. The following day, on the 2nd of June, we had to go down to Free State to oversee the situation in ourselves so that we don't hear it from the news. We went down, we organized a meeting, and the Minister of Minerals and Energy also was Minerals and Regulation was present with the Director General of Minerals. We went down there. As we were busy in the meeting, same day, about 20, we were informed that again 25 bodies were discovered on the following day, 2nd of June. This process continued until the 6th of June. I remember again on the day of the 6th, it was on Saturday, when the last bodies, about 15 bodies, were discovered on the same shaft. That brought the number 281 of the bodies that have been received, have been found in the mine. As much as we say that we are talking of 81 bodies, our concern is that no body has been formally involved. Who can be able to say those are the bodies that were in the area or in the shaft. We don't know the actual figure of the bodies that were there. Why we say it's so simple? Because when we interrogated management of Harmony, when we had a meeting on the 2nd, they were also not clued up about how many people were involved in this illegal mining that was taking place in that area. Also, we must also talk to the issue of that this issue, it came to the attention of management around the 18th of May. The 18th of May, what happened? Assuming the company indicated to us that they have detected some fire underground in the shaft. But as they were monitoring the fire with fire detectors, they saw it's dropping, the smoke is dropping. Until on the 30th, when one of the top managers received a call, we were informed that the manager was in charge on the 30th, when he received a call, 30th of May, that the company must drop about 200 body bags. At Ellen Shaft. Really, they responded the call. They say that it was from anonymous. That also now triggers what Solidarity was raising to say that really there are suspicions that there might be some people within the line management that are leaking out information, because how does these illegal miners know even the cell phones of top management, including the CEO? That is our concern. And also the people who get involved in the chasing of these illegal miners. Once you chase these illegal miners, they would know exactly who is behind them. I remember on the very same session we had on the second, one security guy from Harmon was telling us that it was one day in a Sunday when he got a call of a person who was standing just in front of the gate on a black BMW. Very dark, to say, no, don't be no obstacle. We know your wife, where she's working. We know your kids, their names, and where they are schooling. That is the situation. That's why we say that really we need to dig deep, even internally within management structures. Not only, it may not only be in harmony in the world mining industry itself. Having said that, this illegal mining, you know, involves a lot of processes, including human trafficking, because a number of those bodies, it was alleged that much of them were from the neighboring countries, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Lesotho. That what was reported to us. That's why we say that it's a big scam that involves also human trafficking. You know, we believe that this illegal mining is escalating because of the problems of high rate of unemployment. Now, people have to take these risks so that they must make a living. Also, the gold prices that escalate, because the higher the gold price, more people get involved, maybe they may be getting more returns. Also, the contributing factor that we are looking at is the high level of retrenchments that have been taking place in the industry for the past few years. If recently, if you have listened on TV, on media, from last year, about 18,000 workers in the mining industry have lost their jobs through retrenchment. That shows that really we have got a serious problem of high unemployment. That may cause people to take these risks because they have families to support. We are very disturbed that this practice taking place at a time when the government is working hard with other stakeholders to ensure that there are alternative employment in the country that will replace those people that have been taken on the streets by economic crisis, which led to this retrenchment. We believe as NEM that, you know, when you deal with these illegal miners, these foot soldiers, you are just scratching the surface. There are a number of people who are involved, who have got big money. Therefore, you are dealing with a bigger syndicate, because the person who is digging gold or platinum underground may not know where this platinum or gold is going to be sold. And it doesn't have a network of selling this precious stone. There's a person who has got skills and knowledge of how to refine it and how to sell it and where to sell it. Who are the people who should be targeted for the selling of this gold? Therefore, we believe that we are dealing with a huge problem of criminality. Honorable Chairperson, again, having illustrated the situation above, as NUM, we believe that really the country is facing a serious problem with this problem of illegal mining. Therefore, we need unity as stakeholders so that we bring this to the end. Again, the challenges that we are facing is that the state also helps to play a role in terms of ensuring that we deal with strategies of poverty alleviation. How do we deal with poverty so that people should not end up being smuggled in this criminal industry? Then, if we go forward as NAM corporate chairperson, we are really dealing here with a complex problem as NAM that is facing the country, that really needs us to sit together and see, come up with strategies of how do we deal with this thing and curb it to its finality. The question is, what role does the industry is playing in relation to this illegal mining? The workers' safety should be a priority, because right now, when interviewing our members, comrades will tell you that it is difficult. Once you are approached by the illegal miner, you have to comply, because if you don't comply, you will be dealt with beyond your shift, which becomes a problem also. As part of our overview, that issue needs to be dealt with, issue of prioritizing the safety of our members and workers in general in the mining sector. Also, we have to deal with the legal framework. Solidarity did also talk to that, but as we go on, we'll also be talking to that. Also, as part of our overview, we'll be dealing with the recommendations in trying to eliminate this bad practice of illegal mining. Key issues that we need to look at is that illegal mining is estimated to cost the country sum of 5.6 billion rands in terms of the revenue a year. This reflects this significant increase from the 2 billion in estimation for 2007. Then the issue is that, can our government afford this loss in this present time of global turmoil? Having said that, our overview in terms of African mining industry is that South Africa almost has been the top player in the global mining industry. The country has reserves of nearly 90% of platinum metals on the ground, 80% of manganese, 73% of chrome, 45% of vanadium, and 41% of gold. That is the reserve that we have. If we can now surrender this industry to illegal miners, that means that the percentage of potential economic growth that I have highlighted above can be distorted or can be infiltrated by these illegal miners. That's why we say that we have to act, and act now. More than a century, South Africa has been leading in terms of gold until 2007, when China took over as the producer, a leading producer of gold. I'm not going to talk about the health and safety situation that we always hear when we engage in the international arena on the health and safety conditions of those workers in China. They would believe that with that information, we believe that it can be a leading country, but it may be because of the high exposure of these workers under unsafe conditions. Despite this, South African mining industry has been notorious, Mr. Chairperson, in terms of supporting the apartheid regime during the dark days. oppressing black workers so that they don't have their say. We see that in an extractive industry, you do what you are told to do, subjecting them under inhuman working conditions and living conditions, meaning workers due to unsafe conditions. If you track back the record, in 1984, more than 700 or 700 and something people were dying due to unsafe conditions in this country. About 15,000 in 1984 would be injured because of unsafe conditions. Yes, that have dropped on this new dispensation of the democratic government that we are in. Now we are talking of 200 people who will die each year. About 4,000 people will get injured each and every year. 4,000 people. As much as we say that is not acceptable, because we are talking of human life, breadwinners. Therefore, we have to make initiatives to ensure that this does not happen, the lives of our members, South African workers, mine workers in general, are safe. We are also indicating that, Mr. Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, that more than 18,000 people really have been retrenched, and that is disturbing. The industry, together with the government, have devised strategies that can absorb these workers that get retrenched back to the market so that they are economically active. Then, dealing with the security issues in our industry, the handling of mine workers, its members and the general workers in the mining industry have been a victim and targeted, being forced either to support with food, with these explosives, with cap lamps and other resources that may assist these illegal miners to continue with their jobs. Once they are threatened that once you expose any illegal miner who have seek assistance from you, you will be targeted. That's why we say that we have really to work out and make a clear division of the mine workers who are forced to collaborate, and those who are doing it willingly, who have been hired to do to assist the illegal miners, Yes, we had some cases of comrades who will be forced to give people access. As you clock in, somebody already at your back. As you clock in, want to get in the shop, somebody at your back. Allow me access to get in. Those are the people that we are talking about, that they feel threatened. Talking against the issue of explosive control, talking to the miners, some of the miners will be open to tell us that, you know, as a miner, when you are sitting there in your underground situation, in your box, your waiting place, you are sitting there as a miner during the shift, all other crews are inside the panel. You, a strange man will approach you that you don't know in your section, say, giving you a note to say, one explosive, one to blast, don't waste our time. How do you do? You can't do anything. You can't resist, because once you don't leave explosives, tomorrow when you, or on the head of tomorrow when you knock out, you are targeted. To the extent that either you get threatening SMS telling you again about knowing about your children and your wife and other relatives. Again, We had there is an example that has been highlighted here that about a 26-year-old worker was wounded in an incident where illegal miners were attacking the police. That shows the extent of the problem, if we are able to confront and fight with the police. Again, another incident of illegal miners in Mpumalanga, in Barberton mines. The incident again, when people, they fought with the police carrying AK-47 rifles underground. That has been the strategy. When the police try to persuade them out, either they will shoot back with this AK-47 or pit blast so that they are fumed. Once they are fumed, you have to retreat. You can't go forward. The hand wall is unsupported. That is what is happening. The other area again, which is a challenge to us, is the issue of the fines that have been also highlighted by Solidarity. That the person who was arrested today appeared to the magistrate the following day. He will be given this 50 rand fine, and he leaves. The following day he goes and joins the crew. That is an area also that we need to make sure that we deal with it and its source. Then the development of legislation to deal with the illegal mining is necessary. It will never be correct for the criminals that have the wealth of the country in their hands unlawfully so to be charged so cheap as trespassers. The forced access to work underground, need to be looked at so that people don't get easy access to shaft and they don't expose the lives of those of themselves, one as illegal miners, two also of those who are formal miners. Dealing with the legal framework, we would like to note with deep concern that the fact that there seems to be the dirty void which should deal with this problem of illegal mining. At the moment, the miners can only be charged with this trespass, and we are not comfortable with that because after being charged, they continue with their business. We need to have laws that prohibit illegal mining and provide for stiff sentences and penalties for those who are caught involved in this illegal mining. The existing laws should be acknowledged in dealing with matter of mineral and petroleum resources, as all powers rested upon the minister, so that specific environmental legislation as it relates to mining, prospecting, and related activities can be adhered to. There are other pieces of legislation that can be looked at in dealing with this issue of illegal mining. Natural and Environmental Management Act, Mineral and Petroleum Resource Development Act. Those can be used in broadening the legislation that would facilitate sustainable development on minerals and petroleum resources to alleviate the problem of the risk that people get involved in. Our concern as NUM that before we go to recommendations that we would like to register is that the way this information has been handled, it puzzles us as NUM and gives some suspicions, as we indicated earlier on, that when the fire was detected underground on the 18th of May, we are stakeholders in the mining industry as NUM, having 320,000 membership as NUM, majority from mining. Even a courtesy call to say that there's a set of fire underground in the shaft. That was not communicated to us at any time. That is our concern. Also, the issue of the way the visit by the minister was detected, we would also like to raise it as a concern by the mining industry company in particular, whereby we found that we meet as trade unions with black managers at Welcome Inn, which was identified as the place to meet. The minister is taken to Department of Minerals and Regulations. The CEO and other white top managers are in that site. Now, to us, there is this separation that this trade union is, because those are going to be problematic. Keep them busy at Welcome Inn, deal with the minister at regional offices of DMR, and smuggle here and his team and head him to the shaft so that these trade unions are not involved. That is our take, Honorable Chairperson. Having said that, we will go to the area of recommendations. Our recommendation one, illegal mining in South Africa is a complex problem, but yet commonly known in the developing countries. What we need to do as stakeholders is that we must work together in bringing this matter into its end as stakeholders. Point two, legal miners' security remains at risk. It is the responsibility of the mine owner to ensure its workforce is safe from criminal and any other harm. The mining companies, along with the Department of Mining, the police, the trade unions, and any other stakeholders must work together to improve the security of mines. The third recommendation is the police working together with other stakeholders and security cluster should establish where is this market and bring to book all those involved in illegal mining, processing and selling of this gold. Fourth recommendation, the economic crisis makes it easy for illegal miners to be recruited into this sector. Retrenchment should be avoided by all means in this sector, and training and skills development should be prioritized. Having said that, if you go to the social labor plan of each and every company, they have got their plan of training and development of each and every individual worker. Do companies adhere to that social and labor plan? Because for now, this process is not taken into priority by the companies. They are allowed to drag for a long time. Only when you are about or after you have been affected by retrenchment, that's when you are given life skills, which becomes a problem. But in terms of the social and labor plan, you should be trained while you are still working, so that when you lose employment, you can be employable to another sector. The legislation should be enabled to enforce upon the mining companies to rehabilitate used mines or abandoned mines, and part of should be to take responsibility of the security of those mines and the shaft. If you look on the situation, especially in the gold mines, you are able to get from one mine and get out in another mine and get out to another mine. There are open networks in these mines, moving from one shaft to another. When you interrogate this, you will be told that no, it is also reserved for escape routes. When there are incidents people are trapped. When you are, when you say that, there, when as Junior you say that, you said there are escape routes here, you can be able to go to that shaft. Father, no, that escape route, it can't be used, it's unsafe to use it. How do networks remain an escape route, but when the people are trapped, you can't utilize them? Therefore, we call upon the really, to the minder, to look at this thing of these open networks from mind to mind very much carefully and ensure that the areas that are not going to be used are not going to be used as escape routes need to be closed and have well safe escape routes that can be known by everybody, that should be maintained so that when there is an incident, challenging incident, people can utilize them to escape safely from the dangers underground. Socially responsible investment programs should be prioritized to ensure local economic development and creation of employment in mining communities. That is also part of social and labor plan. When you go to companies have made their commitment as part of social and labor plan, that they will develop in the nearby communities. We have to, the companies have to adhere to that. Some basic understanding of this sector has been established in the, before, has been established. It therefore makes sense for the department, along with the Chamber of Mines, to undertake an in-depth research into the origins of illegal mining. We believe that can help us in terms of really bringing this to an end. Once you know the source, you'll be able to deal with all the other issues. Security measures to be put in place to protect workers from threats and any form and any other form of danger posed by the armed and dangerous illegal miners. Again, which is written in white pen, we also indicate as National Union of Mine Workers that we support the initiatives as indicated by the Minister of Minerals and Regulation when we in the meetings that we had with her in terms of initiatives that are that Minister is trying to ensure that interventions are done. Also, the support we support the committee that have been established in Free State as a project to work on this problem. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Anuam. Honorable members, there it is. Questions, comments, engagements. Over to you. Note, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From yourself, I would like to establish how many, in your estimation, of illegal miners we have throughout the country, and more particularly, the alternative, or in addition to that, in the Free State area where this incident occurred, according to your records. Thirdly, I see all the recommendations are basically in very broad speak. We should work together, we should coordinate, we should legislate, we should... But there's very little, or at least as far as I have read, steps, practical steps saying close the shafts, unused shafts, do be, patrol once a day, whatever. What is it that will effectively, forget about all the fancy nuances and statements and stuff which everybody seems to be making, what is it effectively that will eventually cause the end of this illegal mining? Then thirdly, I've been in this committee for at least 5 years, and if I'm wrong, Mr. Ghazi is sitting there, but he could correct me, but at no stage do I recall illegal mining being an issue. It was about mine health and safety, it was about economics of mining, it was about all these other issues, the MPRDA, But no point in time where there's an oversight by the department, I cannot say. But at least legal mining as such was not an issue until this incident took place. Now, it follows on the question which I asked yesterday, since when has illegal mining become a problem? And part of that question has been answered by the army, says, since 1999. So what is it? When did this problem really become an issue? I know there's been the most probable answer was, well, it's always been around. Now, it's always been around in terms of somewhere in the eastern Transvaal, there's been small miners doing it for their own account. That we all understand. But when has it taken on a level where there's been, on a serious scale, international dealing in illegal mining? That was never an issue, as far as I'm aware, at least. So the question is again, since when has the matter escalated to a situation where you now need to use organized, prevention of organized crime legislation for an issue which I understood was always just a few guys getting together, mining, selling it within the certain areas, etc. Now, I think that's quite important, because then one can start to realize what is the causes of this illegal mining having escalated to the extent it has, or is it duly, mainly due, as I understand Nim this morning, to say it's inter alia due to the economic recession, people being retrenched and the like. So then it's only for the past 2 years that it's really been a major issue, and not just a lingering issue as for the past 100 or 200 years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Honourable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on page 3 with the key issues that illegal mining is estimated at the cost of 5.6 billion in lost revenue. How does the NUM know about this estimation of the loss?
Thank you. Maybe a few areas of clarification. You spoke at length about the possibilities of the existence of the market. Without shedding some light in terms of what is the NUM's understanding of where this market exists. Is it a local market? Is it an international market? Also, on the security issues, you raise quite seriously the danger that the illegal miners pose to members of NUM and mine workers in general. But the central question is, in your own view, how do these illegal miners get access to an extent that they establish themselves underground, and even to a point where they carry weapons? Is it so easy that they could just get themselves mixed with the illegal workers and then find themselves on the ground and continue with their business? Also, you seem to be raising an issue regarding the manner in which you were involved as Labour and the Minister after the incident was known, that there seems to be a divide and rule strategy by the company, where the Minister was kept separately and yourself on the other side. Were you taken to the shaft as well, even though it was separate from the visit by the Minister? I just want to get that clarity, or maybe it ended up in Labour being held up at the hotel, addressed by the senior management, as you alluded to. You also raised the issue of high-level contacts, like these illegal miners having cell phones of management, including the CEO. Is your suspicion that management has a hand in this? And if so, How do you suggest we deal with the matter, you know, in terms of investigating the issues? Thank you. If you could respond to those, and then if there are any other further questions, then we would allow members to interact with you.
Okay, Honorable Chairperson, I'm not alone, I'm with the team. We'll share the questions as we go on. The issue of estimate of how many illegal miners we may think they are involved in this in South Africa. The question is, we don't have a clue. We don't know how many people can be involved. We don't have that clue. When dealing with people who are working night shift at night, you are unable to count them. You don't know, because it might be a person next to you. You don't know. We don't have the actual figure, really, of how many people are involved. Also, you indicated that we are too much general in our recommendations, working together. We are emphasizing the issue of working together simply because we have got a big experience in mining industry, that we have tripartite committee from the Mining Safety Act, the Mining Safety Act number 29 of 1996, have promoted this working together in the mining industry. Therefore, we are participating in different committees that have been established under the Mining Safety Act with DME, with Chamber of Mines, and as labor, NLM, Solidarity, and WASA. That's why we don't exclude ourselves as part of solutions. That's why we are talking about working together. Then the issue of eventually whether we will be able to close totally this business. Yes, this business can be closed if we can be able to work together, as we indicated, that involvement of all stakeholders, your communities, will be able to give out information, having people, also our members and mine workers generally, will come forward when they are approached by these illegal miners. Also, the security and the police, you know, working very hand in hand. You know, we're talking of one example of people, police, well-trained people, can be working undercover in trying to detect what is happening in this in the whole process. By doing those things, we believe that we can be able to bring these people to book. Then deal with the issue of the Honorable Chairman is talking about, the issue of even those who are buying this gold. Once we have got the people who are working on underground with them, undercover, then we will be able to detect where from the source, from underground processing, and out where it is sold. We will be able to detect it, then we can be able to eliminate this problem. When did this illegal mining became an issue? This thing has been coming to us, you know, but it has been coming as we are serving in the tripartite committees under Mining Safety Act. It has been coming to us reported that there are problems in different regions or provinces that people are doing illegal mining. But the issue has been whether we should expose ourselves as the tripartite, go to do our own research and investigation, and mobilize against this illegal mining. We couldn't conclude what action we should take. We said this matter is a police matter. It would be dangerous for us as, if I can use the word, just ordinary civilians to deal with these people, because they are dangerous. Once you follow them, they track you back and your family, they will threaten you. That's why we said that the matter should be given to the police to handle it. Then, on the issue of the market, we don't have a clear route in terms of the market. We don't know where it is sold, we don't know the buyers, but we are suspicious that there are people with big bucks, because people have to sell this gold. If they have to sell, really, there must be a buyer. Also, the issue of paying or whatever allowances or salaries to those who are foot soldiers. That money is coming somewhere from a person who has got money. They can't just be able to pay it amongst themselves. There must be somebody else who have got money, who have got resources, who is able to afford the payment of these people. And also smuggling the people from different countries, your Mozambique, your Zimbabwe, and Lesotho. That involves money. That shows that there's a network of syndicate. Again, on the issue of access to underground, we indicated that sometimes our members would record or report that when I was swiping, blocking in, somebody was already standing behind me to say, I also want access. If you don't give access, the following day we are dealt with, which becomes a serious problem. I remember one time, again in Harman, in Randfontein. Randfontein had a project of, on a weekend off, they would go in, spray tear gases, so that if there are any other, there are these illegal miners, will come out because of fear of tear gas. But one time, I don't recall the month, but around last year, one worker got lost during the shift. The following day, he was found on the waiting place with 15 wounds, dead. That shows that, you know, how dangerous is this market. Access would be either, the suspicion is that another would even bribe some other mine workers. Cap lamps, they would force people to support them with cap lamps so that they are able to be on light when they are underground. Also, there are allegations that there might be involvement of our own patrolling security, so that when they see them, they may close another eye and allow them access to get in. We don't have tangible facts that we can present, say these are evidences. But as we talk to people, because people, they don't want to be open about it, because they fear it to be exposed, which is a bigger problem. I think maybe if there's other questions that I can give others. The issue of cell phones and whether we really suspect management. I'm the national office bearer of the NMM, working in the head office of the NMM. I can't access the cell phone of the CEO unless there's somebody who is within, who can be able to give me that cell phone. Even mine, not every member, being a leader like you speak, not every member was able to access my cell phone, unless, because I'm working with a group here, unless one of this group is giving, have given out the cell phone number. That's why we say that, we don't say everybody in management structures might be involved, but we say there might be some sprinters within. Also, not only cell phones, looking at the area, because we're told that the area that they are targeting in Ellen's shaft is area that has been mined about 5 years ago.
That information we received. I heard a statement from Hamon talking about 10 years ago. When we were in that shop, we were told of 5 years ago that the shop was closed 5 years ago. You know, the areas that this illegal mine is taking place is area of higher grade. How do these illegal miners know that this is the higher grade area and target only that area? That shows us that people who have got information, who's giving this information out. Like I'm speaking here now, others will go and give this information that, no, Eric is behind you. Huh? Again, also the issue of, what is the last question? Question that I didn't answer. Maybe, okay. Let me allow the group to answer some of the questions.
Then said the issue of the estimate. How do we know the estimate? So it's a study conducted by the Institute of Security Studies. That's the study that reflected the estimates. And I'm sure Chamber of Mines once also spoke about this matter. But said they had the question. It's how do people who are not working in a mine have an access to a shaft? They had questions. Now, ours as a trade union, it's awareness, particularly to our members, on dangers of them being involved. Having done that, they then reflect back to us on dangers of them being so protective of something that does not belong to them. Now the portfolio committee must go very deeper and broad. Now you would understand that for you as an MP to have access in a mine, you must have appointments. For a trade union official to have an access in a section underground, that the person must have an appointment. Now, how on earth people who have no relationship with the industry can easily access something that some of us are not allowed to access by the same company? If you can say today you want to go to Elan's shaft, you will be told on procedures on how you should go there. Who then, whose responsibility is to make sure that a closed shaft is not accessed? Whose responsibility is that? Of course, we can't blame each and every individual, but whose responsibility at the end is that? Because you are given a license to mine. Now, you decide not to mine for reasons known to you. You should go back to the person who gave you a license. But stipulations in the legislation are such that you can't just simply abandon a mine and say, we're no longer mining there, so we are out. You would have responsibility that you must take care of. In this instance, to us, the issue of the cell phone, when people would phone a senior manager and say, there's fire underground, who are you? The person does not say who is he. You give an instruction, I'm told by an unknown person that there's fire underground. You're told by an unknown person, only to find that this unknown person is an illegal miner who has access to your conduct. Those are the issues, sir, that we have a problem with, particularly as a union. Now, the portfolio committee also must also deal very deep to the social responsibility. Look, it would seem that had there been no people dying in this illegal mining activity, we could have not been here today. Because people would mine gold illegally, sell it,
The only time that they're going to be caught is when they are in Tabung Hotel. When they're in Tabung Hotel. But if they don't die, there won't be an attention of this industry. So it means elsewhere outside Free State, where people are doing the same activity, but they're not dying. This activity remains dead because they've not died. We first got this understanding when they died in Barbaton. This one, the Free State, was not the first one. They died in Mpumalanga, in this instance. But how then do you say when people die in your property? How then do you say can't be responsibility when human beings die in your property? Then how do you say it can't be responsibility in that sense? Thank you, sir.
Chair, thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me deal with this question of whether we ultimately went to the shaft. Yes, immediately after we've learned that the minister has been locked somewhere with other senior officials from Harmony, we raised our concerns, and after some minutes or some time, we were allowed to join them, and we both went to the shaft. This other issue of cell phones, chairperson, it's not be seen as an allegation for now. It's not an allegation, it's a fact, because they have confirmed by managers from Harmony in that briefing. Now, management of Harmony has been aware of this illegal mining for years. As to why this matter has not been raised seriously, as of today, nobody knows the reasons behind that. Maybe one would only suspect that they wanted to see the situation as it is today of people who are about 87, this is the latest figure, 87 in Free State, dead people, 87 of them. We at the MEM, we are saying this matter is very serious, and it must be regarded as such, because Harmony is the only company responsible for the lives of the people underground in their minds, and nobody else. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
If Honorable Chair, just one person, and on the issue of the visit, really, I think we must applaud the minister. We voted for her. She really respected us. Because when she was locked in the meeting, we were able to conduct her whereabouts, and then the meeting was dropped until we arrived. That's the applaud that we are giving to the minister. Also, I must touch the issue of rescuing processes of these bodies. The minister raised in that meeting, we will continue to raise, is that the rescue processes, the company would throw in these body bags, would wait the following day and get these bodies from the station. Nobody knows even today whether there are still bodies lying down there. Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you very much, NUM. I think, honourable members, we are running out of time. This debate will never be exhausted in one session. And let's give a chance to Sanko to take us through from the point of view of the communities and release anyone. Thank you very much. Sanko, can you occupy the first two seats, please, so that you can face members? Please introduce yourselves and take us through your experiences on this matter.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Committee Members. I'm sure as some who having come here, myself, I'm the Deputy Chairperson of Sangu in the Free State. And then I'm with Molefe Mulish, generally known as Ace Mulish. He is the organizer secretary of Sangu in the province of the Free State. Fortunately, we are residing in Elgon, both of us. So I'm sure we've got a practical sort of situation on the area. Now, having said the chapter 10, I would then take this opportunity to say we would want to thank you very much for letting us have our input in here. Firstly, the issue of illegal mining, the background sort of is from the community point of view, is that by the time when the mining industry was booming, was very active, so to say, in the coalfields area, that is Elgon, then there were illegal gold miners there, but in a different form. I remember very well when I was first time employed by the mine, it was in 1987, and already by that time, we would be able to identify people who are dealing with gold. That is 1987. So it tells you it goes far back than what was mentioned here. Now, the only difference is that by that time, they were dealing with gold, having to deal with people who are working in a gold plant. They're still that rich sort of move there and go wash it at the Chiwate. That's how it started. And then it was not taken so serious by that time. Everybody by that time was in authority. Didn't think it's a big thing. I think so. It's what is a big mistake. As a result, there were no measures that we put in place to ensure that matter get contained at that time. As a result, it went on the G hostel I'm talking about. That hostel was so known that it's like it operates like a gold plant. They've got everything that washes gold there in that particular hostel, in Velcom, particularly in Tabu. I'm sure a lot of interventions were made, specifically from 1994, where the redevelopment of hostels, trying to make them family units, thinking that would sort of curtail that particular problem. But it wasn't. It still continued until today. And as a result, and even some police raids were taken to that hostel, it does not solve that particular problem. It still continues to us as notorious as it is, even today. Now, it therefore says to you, then something has to be done regarding that particular hostel situation and the surroundings. It tells you that it is inherited, that illegal gold business thing, to an extent that it has in fact affected the community in that particular area. Now, the security in the mining industry are sort of a problem. As was indicated, I'm sure by NAM previously and other sort of presenters to say, who is responsible for my security when I'm at work? The employer. Who's responsible for my safety when I'm at work? It's the employer. When people are dead at one place, who's responsible? It's the employer. Now, the question is, has the employer done enough to secure life of ordinary communities? That because these people, as they go home, they become community members. Now, that was now escalated by the issue of the retrenchment. You know, we don't have to go around this issue. Retrenchments are a direct cause to increase the problem that we are facing with today. because by that time, I'm sure we were counting more than 100,000 jobs that were shared because of retrenchment there. And listening to NAM today, it still says about 18,000, it means more, it's coming. And what becomes a problem is that the most affected communities, specifically the community of Helcom Tabo, Virginia Melody, Odinga Forest, Kukwano, and also in Allen Ridge, and also Kennedy. Now, what is the problem is that there is no precautionary measures that are taken when such drastic economic decisions or activities are happening. 100,000 people means a serious decline of economic activity in that area. There was no precautionary measure either by the mining houses or whoever was in authority. And as a result, abantu bavutha ngensini zimbabwe. And then poverty came in occupying the place. And today, it is worse now because the very same people that went to communities and now the issue of illegal mining was sort of taken to a higher level now. They go direct underground and dig on their own. So it tells you this problem from the onset, it was not kept now, it is growing and escalating. They are also becoming more clever in dealing with this particular issue. Now, I'm saying generally, the community also socially affected in that these people they are seen as true in our community. Because somebody gets disappeared for 6 months and he comes back and tells his peers that, look, I was away for 6 months and I'm having a 4x4. And my mama's house is beautiful and I'm living this nice life. I'm just resting for 2 months, I'm going back again. Now, it says now that the young people in this particular area, now they grow in that kind of sort of environment. So that becomes a serious challenge that I think the committee must also go deep into to ensure that this matter does not escalate more than it is now. Otherwise, it degrades the status of the community to a very, very low level. That is unacceptable. Now, the recommendation that, you know, as we talk to communities, they ask the first point, which is, what are you doing as government? Now, what is government doing with this closed shaft? Every time you have a community mass meeting, what are you doing? We are losing jobs on a daily basis, a lot of people are unemployed, unemployment rate is so high, and the shaft are closed every day. And what is the government saying about the closed shaft? That is intertwined with the issue of the social responsibility of the mining houses. As I said from the index, it was never given. And now yes, there's changes in that. Is the mining houses speaking today? Because if they were, I don't think we could have been in a situation where we are today. Now, the issue of the closing of the shaft is something that is in the mouth of the communities on a daily basis. Because they know now. Before they didn't know that it's going to affect negatively. But now today they know. Immediately you talk about treatment, then the communities will profit. Now, they then ask you this question with the intention to say, can the government take responsibility of the closed shaft and open it? And previously the answer was to say, it's very expensive to mine gold or so. Now the community, the ordinary community, they say, look, by that time gold was 200 and something, but today it's 900. And you can't give us that answer today. And now what do you do with that sort of kind of situation? And they said, you said there's no gold, the gold is depleted. But the illegal miners, they go inside there, they dig gold, they get out of 6 months, they are rich. Where do they get gold if you think there's no gold in there? It's something that we think from the community perspective, really the committee needs to go deeper into that particular issue and come with a really sort of remedy situation in that kind of situation. Now, our recommendation is to say the mining houses must step up their security. really to us. It's unacceptable that someone is not working in a mine, it's just easy for him to go inside the mine. And then the mining houses, they want to say, no, people are being intimidated. Who is responsible for my security when I'm at workplace? He's my employer. Now they must step up the security. Really, all avenues must be explored to ensure that there is nobody who is not waiting for a particular mine who's going to be able to go underground. It is well done sort of exclusive. Well, now, secondly, we are saying, since this particular area we're talking about, the illegal mining, I'll talk of from the perspective of the mines that are around the coast, rather than Helcom, the Allen Ridge, and so on, that it was affected by a retrenchment heavily, we all of us know that. Why a special program is not sort of couched, that is at least going to have the employment that was lost in that particular area. That in that way, you ensure sustainability of the problem that you are dealing with in today. We show that recommendation will sustain the problem that also I think NAM is faced with. From there is the ensuring that the stakeholders they participate in different forms and coming together and clamping down now on this particular people. Because as I said here, you find that the kingpin, Marena Batwana, they are known by the community. And then people who become first culprits become these innocent, hungry people who don't have anything to put on the table at the end of the day. They are the first ones who have been killed. What about the people who are sustaining and even gaining more than me having paid 2,000 or 10,000 for being underground for 6 months? It therefore means that the focus would be on getting the catalyst of the problem. The catalyst of this particular problem. That those people are the people that they are saying the SAPS, together with NAM, together with SAMHO and all the other stakeholders are working together, coming up with strategies, how do we ensure that these people get identified in a way in which it will actually resolve this problem. Because even if they can do whatever, these people they've been there, I'm saying, from 1987. And they are still there. And the people have been caught. And the people are still in court today. So you are actually not addressing the problem. For us to stop this thing, I think the kings of this must be identified and a really clear program that will ensure that they are dealt with amicably and not endangering the lives of other people, and so that will address this particular problem in a long way. Now, the mining houses again. Oh no, 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 on closing of the shaft. If my memory says in OM, the legal sort of police figure says, when you close the shaft, it must come back to its origin when there was no shaft. But how many shafts were closed and nothing? You still see all those heaps, all that infrastructure, all everything which ultimately again attracts this illegal money. They are still there. You shall be value in attendance. The shaft is closed. But all the infrastructure is there. Why that law is not implemented? That they must rehabilitate enough. If they decide no, there's no more gold in this particular shaft, then we are closing it and everything must be closed. That's who for it. Because the other issue is that you'd want some of the infrastructure maybe to assist the community, but it can't happen. Because rehabilitation has not taken place. Now, those are, I think, the even the demolition of the hostel. You see, the hostel, I don't know. That hostel must be done away with. And the people who are correctly so South African citizens who stay there, there must be a special project that goes, they get integrated in the community. We just don't have that set up there. Because what I know is that the municipality has a problem of a leakage of wood. If leakage of wood, and that was said, you correct it today, by cutler pipe, they just broke the pipe, because if they are blind, they must get water, they must wash both. You correct it today, tomorrow it's leaking again, they just drop that pipe again and so on. So it's also affecting the municipality in the area. So it's such a serious problem that even the police, they know well about this particular hostel and so on, and the surroundings. Asking something of that nature, would then be able to address the problem that we have in that area forever? I think, Chairperson, that is the input made in Sanko. And again, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to make this particular input.
Thank you, Sanko. Honorable members, there you have it. Honorable member, Honorable Matibela, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first start by apologizing for arriving to this meeting a bit late. I come from a small town in Mpumalanga called Barberton, where there is a lot of this illegal mining activity going on. Now, the problem there is that so many people are unemployed, and when you ask why is this activity going on, they will tell you that they are not working. How are they going to survive? There are so many mine shafts, disused mine shafts in the area, so that is the only way that they can make a living. So there you find people coming from Mozambique, Swaziland, and the neighboring countries. So these people, if they stop the activity, they say, they are not going to be able to survive. So now, my question to COSATU and the SANCO is that recently there are these calls that we need to nationalize the mines. What is the stance of COSATU and SANCO on that stance, actually? Because you can see that we are going to lose a lot of people as long as there are these disused mines, which are said that there is no gold already. So what would be your stance on that one? Because really, it's going to continue and continue, and so many people are going to die. We've tried to speak to the DMP, the SAPS, all stakeholders, but even the mine management in that area where I come from, when we visited them, they said there is nothing that they can do. In fact, they are losing this battle. They are even thinking of closing down the mines. So that's my question to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the wonderful presentation, Sanko. I think Sanko, to me, it was like they were reading my mind. I had that question after when we finished asking questions about the rehabilitation of the mine. And that is really a worrying factor, because we've got that on paper, the legislation is there, for rehabilitation of mines which are no longer in operation. But like you have just said, and my colleague has just talked of the Mpumalanga one, where there are no longer mines, and I don't know which year this has come for the rehabilitation of mines. They were caused. It was said that it was ownerless mine. But now here is Harmony. With their shafts which are no longer working, why can't Harmony rehabilitate those shafts? Because yesterday, or it's today, the answer was that we stopped mining because the mine was too deep, and we found that it was too dangerous for people to remain there and mine. So my question really goes to Harmony. to say why. And like I said yesterday, that there must be something that I don't think anybody has got a billion money around to loiter around. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be short. I must say, it's probably one of the more frank discussions I've seen, because it doesn't seem as if you represent a specific interest, although you come from the community. But there's a very applicable legal standard, and that's called apportionment of liability. Now, you know, the worker, especially the worker who enters that mine, has been a previous mine worker, submits himself to that risk. I mean, he's to blame. Secondly, you've got a community, as you stated. You've got the dealers, you've got an alternative gold plant, G-hostel. So the community accepts that risk. You've got the mining houses, who, with due respect, if you have a right to mine, if you sunk the shaft, if you've drilled those tunnels, it's your legal liability to ensure that people do not enter those mines. People are not injured. People do not die. It's a legal responsibility. It's not what a mine house should or should not do. It is forced to do so by law. But that's the one side of the point, because the other side of the point is government is legally responsible for the derelict and ownerless mines. Inasmuch as the mining houses are supposed to fulfill or adhere to that trend, as I've stated with regards to mining houses, so the state has a responsibility, because the mining houses could do what they're supposed to be doing, but the shaft linked to it might be ownerless or abandoned mine, and it's the state's responsibility then to make sure that it maintains the same standard as what the mining houses are supposed to be doing in terms of their own mine. So it's a very broad based approach. And then fourthly, the government, in another role, not only as owner, but should inspect whether the mines and the communities and the workers do not enter those mines. So you're quite right. I think the previous speaker said is that you need to cooperate. Now, you know, somewhere in that line, there's an apportionment of liability. So it's not one party saying, could show the finger and say, but it's only a mining houses, or it's only the workers, or it's only mining houses. It's a combination and a shared liability. Everyone has some fault and some liability in terms of what I see, what has been described in the past 2 days.